British Spy Stories, Season 2, The Kill Order. Episode 12. The light is starting to fade over the Alps. Catherine sits on a grass bank by the side of the highway, after walking from the hotel and along the route that runs through the valley. At this time of year, the skiing season is coming to an end, but at the top of the mountain she can see smudges of red and blue, weaving through powdery whiteness. There's a cafe by the roadside, 50 yards ahead, and she walks to it and takes a table in the window, overlooking the road. She orders coffee. She hadn't realized how cold she was until the hot drink hits her stomach. She still doesn't know who kidnapped her. She presumes members of Fazoli's gang who found out about the kill order somehow. Or maybe they just got lucky and saw her coming over the back wall. Catherine feels partly to blame, as her research is normally meticulous. She should have checked the area around the property more carefully before barging in. She looks around the cafe. Most of the customers are tourists. But on the road outside, she can see two delivery vans parked up, and she begins to wonder if the drivers are taking a break here, too. She waits. One man finishes his drink and counts out Swiss franc coins on top of the bill that sits to his left on a small dish. He rises to go, pulls at the door, and starts to walk to one of the delivery vans. Catherine springs up, goes out through the door, and runs after him. He's climbing into his cab and she runs over before he closes the door. "Excuse me," she says in German. "Are you going to Innsbruck?"
"Yes, I am, young lady. Do you want to come with me?"
"Yes, thank you." He indicates for her to walk round to the other side. They travel into Innsbruck and he drops her in the centre of the town. She walks to the British consulate in Kaiserjägerstrasse. The place is dark inside, but there's a telephone number to ring on a sign outside, as the consulate is only open in the mornings. Catherine goes to the pizza shop next door and blags use of their phone to make a call. A young woman answers the phone who sounds as though she's been educated expensively. Catherine explains that she is a civil servant who's been attacked and needs to contact her bosses in London. The woman's name is Lily Cornwell, and she agrees to come over immediately and help. Catherine sits down on the pavement. Her clothing is torn from the last few days, the blood on her leg congealed into a tough 3-inch scab down her shin. Her face is flecked with the remains of the blood from the man who died on top of her. She leans back on the door and closes her eyes, waiting for the nearest thing to the cavalry that she could find. The headlights of the Z4 scan across the sign for the underground car park of the Square 9 Hotel in central Belgrade. Gabby drops down the ramp, parks and goes up in the lift to reception. Once in her room, she dumps her case on the stand, showers and crashes out on the bed. The alarm she set on her watch triggers at noon. The lunch date with Barbu is in half an hour, downstairs in the restaurant. She puts on a black suit, black heels, and gold earrings from Erica's wardrobe. The restaurant is classy chocolate and tan, with white tablecloths and large wine glasses. As she has only seen a couple of photos of Florin Barbu, she asks a waitress if she knows him, which she does, and the girl leads Gabby through the tables to a man sitting next to the floor-to-ceiling windows that look out onto a courtyard garden.
"Fräulein Müller," he says. "I don't speak German, and I'm guessing you don't speak Serbian," then indicates the other chair for her. Barbu is short and stocky. He has a round face with curly, dark hair. He has small brown eyes and hands that are too big for his arms. They talk about her journey down and the city, and because Erica has never been here before, he tells her about where to visit as a tourist by day and the clubs and bars to visit by night. She listens, all the while assessing how she can turn this man to be an MI6 source. After the food, coffees are served.
"Shall we talk about business, Erica?" he says. "Ruslan says you run a sizable business empire already."
"Seven cities in Europe," says Gabby.
"How many people?"
"It varies. Some stay for months. others only a few weeks. About 150 employees altogether. He widens his eyes and nods in admiration.
Impressive.
It's okay, she says. But I'm always looking for new markets, and Belgrade is the sort of place where we do well.
You know I already have a substantial interest in a similar business here in my own city.
That's why Ruslan suggested we talk.
I can't think of a reason to go into business with anyone. My operation is a good one.
Are the staff local or brought in? Says Gabby, watching his eyes for any reaction. Babu smiles.
As you know, bringing in girls from other places is more economic.
Gabby knows that Germany is one territory where Babu has failed to gain a foothold. So far. I'd like to do a deal, she says. 50-50.
What's your proposal?
I run your escort operation. I grow it, and we split the profits. He is listening intently. And I introduce you to some of my friends in Berlin.
Are your friends any involved in escorts?
He says. She shakes her head. No, mostly importing arms. From some of the old Soviet states into Europe. Then redistributing into the Middle East. Babu is quiet, his mind thinking through what she said.
Let me think about it.
What is there to think about?
Risk, he says. Berlin is a much bigger market than Belgrade. I don't have the people there, like I do in Serbia.
And there was me thinking you'd have balls, Florin. He smiles.
I'll tell you tomorrow. Let me show you one of my clubs tonight, and you can meet some of the girls who work for me.
Gabby can hear the music from the club Barbon as she walks from her taxi to the glittering entrance doors. Her gold mini dress chosen for impact from Erica's wardrobe. Apart from this single way in, the rest of the building is an enormous hulk of brick, painted matte black. She says her name and the bouncer repeats it back 3 times as he checks the guest list. Then he finds her and unhooks the red rope that swings between 2 gold stanchions at the entrance. She walks into the place and asks to be shown to Babu. The waitress eyes her with some suspicion when Gabby says his name. This is his world. He is the king here. And she's an outsider. Babu is sitting on an almost circular padded banquette covered with purple velvet. A young woman is sitting next to him, with her hand on his thigh. He sees Gabby approaching and whispers something to the girl, who gets up and leaves. He indicates the recently vacated seat next to him, and Gabby sits. They talk of nothing important for an hour. Babu trying to impress and Gabby failing to be so. People come and go from the velvet seating. At one stage, Florin introduces her to a man who is
one of my closest friends.
The man is tall, with unforgiving eyes. His face is pockmarked, and his hands have seen action in the boxing ring at some stage. He seems out of place in his handmade suit. Like Babu, a wolf pretending to be a sheep. Gabby makes some excuse after a while and tours the floor of the club. She can see Babu's escorts at work throughout the place. Some look only in their late teens, which causes Gabby's stomach to tighten. A woman named Gail approaches her and says that Babu has asked her to say hello, as Erica is a potential partner in their company. Gabby suggests they move to the bar and away from the music so they can chat. Champagne is delivered to their table without either of them ordering it. Over the next hour or so, Gabby gets Gail to tell her as much as she can about the escorts. Where are they from? How are the new girls found? How many girls leave? Has there been any violence? Gail is hesitant at first, but the alcohol loosens her tongue, and she becomes more candid over time. Gabby takes it all in, thinking how she can use this information to corner Florin Babu. As the evening turns into the early hours of the next day, Gabby thanks Gail and decides to leave. She goes to the ladies' bathroom and from there walks to get her coat from the cloakroom, a route which takes her alongside the bar. The guy who she was introduced to earlier with a pockmarked face is there, drinking. And he steps out into her path.
Going so well, you beautiful?
He says. Gabby says nothing but steps to the side and he moves in echo.
One drink before you go. I'm fine, thank you. Come on, he says. After all, isn't that what you do? Sorry?
She looks at him directly.
You may dress better now, but I hear you fuck like a pro. Strictly for cash, of course.
Gabby stares at him, recalling her combat training, and wondering which movement he will expect the least. She smiles, turns to the bar, and stands next to him. Beneath the bar ledge, she can see the bottles used for cocktails, and fruit on a board, already cut for drinks, but yet to be used. She puts her hand on his arm. He orders more champagne. Then, suddenly, Gabby leans over the bar. Her fingers curl around a bottle of vodka. She pulls it out and slams it down on the edge of the bar. Glass shards fill the air between her and the man. Her arm continues the rotation and she drags the broken bottle across his face. The man cries out, falls back against the bar stool, blood starting to spew from a dozen cuts on his cheek. He staggers and falls badly to the floor, crashing three more bar stools in his descent. She throws the bottle away, then leans back over the bar, and this time grasps the fruit knife. She drops on top of him, her legs holding him in position. She drives the knife into his hand, and he screams again. Gabby leans over his shaking body and brings her face close to his.
You were wrong,
she says, looking him directly in the eyes.
This is what I do.
After a second she stands, then turns and walks out, and the blood from his hand spreads slowly out across the shiny floor of the bar.